My name is Joanna QL, and my favorite thing is making things.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, welcome back to Finding Favorites. This is your host, Leah Jones, and it is Sunday, October 25th. Fall is definitely here in Chicago, and so is early voting. Early voting sites are open in every ward across the city. You don't have to vote in your ward to early vote, so make sure that you have your plan to get registered to vote and vote early so we can spread out the impact of and risk to poll workers and poll volunteers. It's really been exciting. A lot of states have switched to vote by mail, but New York State just had its first ever early voting. And so I'm excited for friends in New York who are getting to experience early voting as well. Today's episode is with Joanna QL. She has a cookbook coming out on Monday, October 26th. Her book is available tomorrow, Monday, October 26th. It's called The Seasonal Table Winter, and it is the first of four planned cookbooks. And you can also check out her website, her Big Cartel site, where she is selling these spice starter kits and signed book plates. So if you're interested in the type of cooking she does, but you're worried about going out and buying all these spices, she's doing these kits with the top five kind of most curious, difficult to source. If you bought it, you might end up with too much. So how do I just try it without ending up with a big pile of spices? So The Seasonal Table Winter and its associated sites. It will be good for you if you are, as we go back into lockdown, and you think about winter cooking and meal planning and batch cooking. And I think her cookbook will be a nice companion to cooking podcasts like Home Cooking with Samin and Rishi, you know, my total BFF podcast friends. So yeah, grab a copy of her book. I love talking to authors as their books come out. That's a gift that this podcast has given me. And with that, I'm just going to say, wear your mask, wash your hands, stay safe, stay home, and make a plan to vote. Early voting is possible for so many of us. So if you can go out there and get your voting done, please take care of it. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. This is the podcast where we find out about people's favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's the thing. I'm always really excited about who I'm talking to. And that is the case today. Today I am with Joanna Cornell. I just practiced it a bunch. Today I'm with Joanna Cornelli Lindsley, who on the internet you might know as JQL or Joanna QL, because we just did a 5-minute lesson on how to pronounce her last name. Joanna, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's definitely fall in Chicago now.
It's like fall approaching winter. I ordered a heater for my deck. I've been having a fire every day in my backyard.
Yeah. We're there. Yeah. Last weekend, a friend texted me who doesn't have a yard, and she was like, "Hey, is it cool if I have a firewood delivery to your house so that we can do fires in your fire pit this winter?" So yes, we've done fires 2 weeks in a row now, just sitting out in the backyard so we can have a social life and not give each other COVID.
Very important things.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So Joanna and I know each other. Like a lot of guests that I've had on this podcast, we are old school original Twitter friends.
From like when there were like six of us on Twitter.
Yeah. Truly from like the beginning of Chicago Twitter, when it was like, well, you use Twitter, obviously we're friends now.
Meetups were like 10 of us would show up and be like, oh, this is all of Twitter. Hello, people who have real faces and names.
Yeah, it was such a different time. And then I started doing social media for Rockstars and Rabbis. And Joanna You introduced me to Martin Atkins.
I did.
You brought me into that world.
Yeah. So my previous career was in the music industry, and that led me into teaching music business.
Yeah.
And yes. So Martin and I worked together. I introduced you to Martin.
Yeah. And so, and now Martin is on faculty at my alma mater of Millikan University, which is just a very wild full circle thing. Like, I love that he's teaching there. It is confusing to me to see him come through on like my Millikan emails. It just feels like such a two worlds combining, but it makes a lot of sense that he would be actually at a music business school at a college. So
yeah, no, and I know he loves it there. So
yeah. And so that's when you were in the music business, and it was 10 years ago at least.
Yeah. I mean, we met like early Twitter. My daughter was also brandy new, which is part of why I spent so much time on Twitter.
Yeah.
And she just turned 12. So it's been a minute.
That's impossible.
She just turned 12. She's taller than I am. She borrows my clothes. I never have hair scrunchies because they all disappear into her room.
That's so wild. That is the only way that I can tell that time is passing.
Because you remember teeny tiny little.
She was tiny.
She was.
She was so tiny.
We called her the toddler.
Yeah.
She ran around everywhere.
Yeah.
Wow. Now she's the middle schooler and she lives in a cave.
Right. Right. So she's just on like Google Meet and Zoom all day, all night now?
Pretty much. You know, she does a little bit of in-person school, like on a kind of weird blended hybrid thing.
Okay.
She goes for the outdoor portions of stuff. So she's there like 2 or 3 days a week for like 2 hours and they go to the forest preserve.
Okay.
Otherwise it's all Zoom and Google Meet. And then her social life consists of logging back on at like 8 o'clock to play Roblox and Minecraft, and we exchange YouTube videos with her friends. There's a group of them that like that 8 o'clock phone call is sacred.
Yeah.
Because that's what they got right now.
I can't come up with any, when I think about my friends who are parents, and I'm like, oh, it must get easier when they're like 8 years old, because 8 years old, you can start, or maybe even before eight, like they can understand more of like what's happening in the world to impact them. But it, you know, eight, they're becoming people, and they have really not becoming people, but like, I keep trying to think of like, what is the easiest age to be a parent of children? And so far I've come up with, no age is easy.
Absolutely. I mean, the challenges are different from minute to minute. I know I have to deal with things with a 12-year-old that my friends with 16-year-olds and 4-year-olds don't have to deal with.
Right.
But I also have a 12-year-old, so I don't have a 4-year-old who's going to come into the call 9 times because she's perfectly able to stay and do her own thing for an hour and a half.
Right.
So it's different. And I think it's hard for parents because it's all challenging, and it just depends on... It also depends on how social your kid is to begin with.
Right.
How comfortable they are with technologies. And honestly, how close the family is, how much time you all spent at home before COVID.
Yeah.
Because I mean, a lot of the clients that I work with now, that's been a lot of the work the last few months, is trying to navigate space when, you know, people have very, very busy lives. And when they're not home all day with each other, to suddenly be sharing that space all day is a big negotiation, regardless of the age of the people involved. I mean, I've had clients that are just roommates, like college kids or 20-somethings that are like, oh my God, I think we're going to lose our minds.
Yeah, it seems I have friends who, you know, between like both of their work travel schedules, people are spending more time with their spouses than like ever in their whole marriage.
Yeah.
Which comes with its own, I think, blessings and curses.
Absolutely.
Blessings and challenges. And I've got a friend who works in the doggy daycare industry. And so apparently there's this, like, dogs, puppies need to be exposed to like 150 different faces when they're young in order, like, that's part of socializing, is like dogs being introduced, being walked in the neighborhood, seeing people. And that they had to start organizing, because people were like, oh, I'm home all the time, I'll get a puppy. But then the flip side is that dog's not going to be socialized for when you go back. So like, how do you plan for the flip side of going back to things?
Right, because eventually we will, it will look different than it is now. Whether it looks like it looked before or not, it's going to look different than now. And I think that's the same with our kids too. It's the, you know, it's very different when you have to be in a classroom with 22 people, whether you like them or not.
Yeah.
But it's also hard if you're on Zoom to connect with the people that you want to connect with when there's 22 people on the screen. And right. And so the same thing with the puppies and the, there's just a lot of challenges that I think that we as a society were not really prepared for.
Yeah.
And I think that people are navigating in different ways and some more successfully than others.
Yeah. What type of work are you doing these days that you're helping people negotiate these types of conversations?
So, I mean, the context in which I met you through Twitter, I was already doing a lot of teaching and artist management, mm-hmm. Which, you know, I think for me, there's always been this piece of advocacy. I've always worked with little kids and I've always worked in roles in which I was helping other people figure their stuff out.
Yeah.
So I ended up going back to school when my daughter was three to get my certification in Ayurvedic medicine.
Okay.
I had started practicing for myself back as a teenager. My first therapist introduced me to Ayurveda. But my husband got very sick and I ended up using a lot of what I had learned with Ayurveda to kind of get through that situation, and decided that I wanted to be doing something more than just music industry. I wanted to be able to advocate for people in a bigger sense.
Yeah.
So I went and got my certification so that I could actually do that beyond just me and my family. And I specialized in school in the body work for Ayurveda, mm-hmm. and in cooking for the Western palate.
Interesting.
So since then I've been doing, I've been working in a couple of different clinics doing various types of body work. Mm-hmm. But I've also had a lot of private clients that I work with diet, lifestyle, and herbal suggestions. I kind of, the term that gets used for me now these days is that I'm a pathfinder.
Okay.
Help people find their path, which again, it's not so much different than what I was doing in the music industry. It's just now not just music industry. It's less about, you know, learning how to do copyrights and more about exactly what we were just talking about of how do you navigate the space in your house with three people when you're not used to having three people there. So since COVID, most of that bodywork stuff is not happening because I'm not going to touch people for 60 yeah. to 90 minutes. And there's other things we can be doing right now. There's other work we can be doing.
Yeah.
So I've been very focused on that, doing a lot of phone and Zoom calls.
Yeah.
Doing more of kind of the lifestyle coaching and work, and also diet, which is what the big project I've been working on is a series of cookbooks. The first one is Winter and will be coming out soon.
So. Yeah. A week and a day from the day that we're recording, but tomorrow, the day this podcast comes out, you have a cookbook coming out, your first cookbook.
Yes.
And that is, now I have already more understanding of what it is. So you have, what is the title of the cookbook?
The title of the cookbook is The Seasonal Table, Winter.
Great.
Obviously, we'll have Seasonal Table, other seasons coming yes. out later on. Yes.
Great. So I'm going to do a little pause before I keep asking you, is okay. your favorite thing going to be, is your favorite thing related to the cookbook or something else?
I think it's related, but kind of tangentially. My okay. favorite thing is making things.
Okay.
All and right. that can be sewing, that can be cooking, that can be crafts with my Girl Scouts, that can be new trails in the woods.
All right. So I wanted to know where we were headed, so I didn't use the whole hour asking about the cookbook. And you're like, but that wasn't my favorite thing. So is Ayurvedic, it now seems to me like it's a system. It's like a system of learning about body and health, because you've said body work and recipes and conversations and like life pathfinding with people. So it seems to me like maybe it's like a foundational belief system, or is it a philosophy that these things are sit on top of?
So Ayurvedic medicine is comes from India.
Okay.
So it's kind of ancient Indian medicine. It shares many of the same roots as Chinese medicine.
Okay.
Acupuncture and herbs in the Chinese medicine system.
Yes.
There's a lot of crossover because when you look at the history of the different wars and how people moved around, mm-hmm. the knowledge moved back and forth between the two areas.
Okay.
So it's considered to be the oldest medical system in the world.
Okay.
In India, there are vaidyas, that's the equivalent of a doctor, who mm-hmm. actually do perform surgeries and things like that. But the level of training that I have, my scope of practice is not so much surgical as it is emotional, mental health, lifestyle, diet, and then the body work, because sometimes there are things within our body that keep us from being who and what we want to be. Mm-hmm. And when we can release those stuck spots or those patterns, then everything else kind of falls into line. It's that whole kind of mind, body, spirit.
Yes.
That, you know, acupuncture also has similar applications.
Got it. Okay. That was very helpful.
In addition to that, though, I also do have some experience in Native American medicine, and I do have certifications in Western medicine. So I kind of blend it all.
Yeah. Because you're from New Mexico, right?
I am.
Yeah. You're from New Mexico and your husband is Italian.
Yes.
And so you've got like a lot of Western and indigenous cultures and things coming together in this.
My mom's family was also Italian, but my husband is like from Italy, Italian.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we both grew up in New Mexico, which has a very strong Native presence.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then the cookbook, you're saying like, okay, you have a Western palate, so there's things you like to eat, but so you're like rewriting recipes that are healthier, but not in a like calorie, fat, cholesterol way, but in a Ayurvedic way. But then they're good to introduce to people who like Western food.
Kind of. So I like to think of it. I mean, when my publisher came to me and asked me to write the book, she honestly just said to me, "I want you to write down everything you make this winter." And that's gonna be the cookbook. So it is that, but with some tweaks.
Okay.
So it's really about having a relationship with food and an understanding of why we consume food and why certain foods might be more appealing or more healthy for us. So it's definitely not, you know, a low fat or a low sugar or a keto, or it's real food. And my intention is not that people will go make every recipe as written. My intention is that people will read the recipes and be inspired to do something based on that for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, my brother's been one of my testers and he has an allergy to peppers. So anything that has heat in it, he's been replacing.
Okay.
I've kind of worked with him. And so there's some suggestions in the cookbook of if you don't want it spicy, you could do this instead. So the idea is really about each individual finding their own relationship to the food, because when the food tastes good and is cooked with love, it's going to be healthier for you, even if it does have fat or sugar or, in fact, we need all those things to survive.
Right.
It's the balance of them and how our body processes them and whether or not we're actually listening to what we need.
Wonderful.
So they're all very seasonal. They do go into a lot of herbs and stuff, but again, it's all Western palate. There's not really anything in there that most of us haven't heard of. Even if people haven't cooked with it, at least, you know, cardamom is a word people are familiar with.
Yes. Well, that's really exciting. So that comes out tomorrow and people will be able to get it on Amazon.
So I decided to do a signed book plate, and I'm going to have a website, Big Cartel site, it will be live by the time this airs.
Yep.
That has the signed book plates and also has some other add-on things. There's tea towels.
Nice. And
some olive wood spoons that have been wood burned by me that say love harder and cook harder. And I'm also going to put together kind of ingredient kits.
Nice.
So for people who might want to try some things but don't want to go buy rose petals mm-hmm. and cardamom. I picked the five things that I think are either the most expensive to buy or the hardest to find.
Yeah.
And
so it'll be like a starter kit.
Yeah. So you can cook a couple things in the cookbook and decide if you want to spend more money on mustard seed or chamomile or.
Oh, I love that.
Cardamom or.
So that has been your big summer project has been preparing for your winter cookbook, but it's not the only thing we're here to talk about today.
No.
We're also here to talk about your favorite things. So, Joanna, what are we here to talk about today?
I like making things. I like crafting and playing with stuff. So, you know, I'm wood burning everything since COVID started. I used to do it, and I don't know why COVID brought that back out in me, but early on when people were posting memes of the map of the house, you know, like traffic jam in the hallway where the cat was laying down or whatever, and started labeling places in their house, my daughter and I went out and found scraps of wood in the garage.
Yeah.
And I got the wood burner out, and we renamed all of the parts of our house as if it was an Italian village and hung up little signs.
Oh, I love that.
And so I've been wood burning spoons. I used to do that for Christmas for all my friends and family. My dad used to do those for us when I was little.
Yeah.
And the spoon I got was bigger every year until I was like a grown up and got a full sized wooden spoon.
A grown up spoon.
Yeah, with my name on it. Mm-hmm. So I've been wood burning spoons, kind of been wood burning anything I could burn.
It's like when people get a label maker.
Yes.
And they're like, I got the label maker just to organize my seeds. And then
I'm not gonna label everything.
Yeah. A few weeks later, everything in the house has a label on it. What has been your most intricate wood burn of COVID?
I did a wooden drinks tray for my cousin who got married last year for her 1 year anniversary. And I did all kinds of like scroll work and a big fancy monogram in the middle of it.
Very cool. And then how long did that? Was that a multi-day project?
It was.
Okay.
Partially because it starts to get really hot and burn my fingertips.
Oh, that's a problem.
Yeah. So you have to take some breaks there. And also my husband and my daughter start wandering downstairs going, something on fire? especially when it's, I mean, in the summer it's better, but when the winter's in spring in Chicago, when the windows are closed.
Yeah.
Very quickly fill up the house with the smell of burned wood.
Right. And then do you varnish something like that when you're done? Or is it like a, I don't know, like how do you finish a wood burn project like that?
I do a lot of varnish.
Yeah.
Kind of sand it a little bit, smooth off the edges, and then some kind of clear coat or even, you know, a darker stain depending on the wood that I started with.
Nice.
I'm working on a little box that's kind of a combo of wood burning and decoupage because that seems like something I should spend my time on.
Yeah.
So I took a bunch of leaves from herbs in my garden and kind of decoupaged them down. And then like now I'm wood burning through the decoupage, like the name of the herb. It looks pretty funky.
That's cool.
Yeah. I don't know what like I'm going to do with the box because I would never put all those herbs together in the box or like, I don't know. I just wanted to make a box and glue herbs to it. So
that seems like a fine reason to do it.
Yes. And it's the same thing I do in the kitchen. Like today I made a chocolate pear cake because that sounded good. So the making things is always kind of that. My daughter and I make most of our own clothes.
Yeah.
We crochet. Like there's always some, not one, there's always 10 projects in our house.
Yeah.
We had a, when we were talking about school this year for my daughter, and we were talking about moving the space around upstairs because we don't need a guest room right now.
Yep.
So we were talking about moving offices around because my husband's also been home since February and my office is really much more the garden and the kitchen. So getting my stuff out of the way and moving them both up here. And we ran into a leak with that storm that we had that destroyed 60% of my roof.
Yeah.
Yes.
60% of your roof?
Yeah. Sounded like a truck hit my house.
Oh.
So we needed a new roof. We had a leak. I hated the carpet. So I was like, well, I should check and see if the leak's under the carpet. Maybe. And yes. So we pulled up all the carpet. We were excited. There was tile that lasted a minute and a half until we went, oh, it's asbestos tile.
Oh no.
So cut to the three of us reflooring our entire second floor, repainting.
Wow.
It was like a full renovation in 2 weeks. So the making thing is like not just small either. Like
right.
It's we redid our entire second story. It's beautiful hardwood floor now. I wish we'd done it years ago.
Right.
But you know, there we were with different saws and glue
and then you had to leave the tile down, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so we didn't touch the tile at all. We just put on top of it.
Where do you think making things comes from for you? I mean, your dad was a woodworker, so you probably had access to crafty things at home, but do you ever remember a time when you weren't a maker?
No, both of my parents are highly creative. My dad is an engineer, mechanical and electrical. So like I didn't even know that handyman existed until I was like 22. Because we need a new outlet. You're a ceiling fan. Like, let's just go replace it. You know, and then my mom, in very creative, especially with any kind of textile stuff. She sews, and I've never seen her use a pattern.
Oh, wow.
She once costumed an entire show that I was musical directing in college.
Yeah.
Just by having all of the kids lay down on butcher paper, and she traced them. And then she wrote down their name and their part name, second giraffe or whatever. And a week later, she came back to rehearsal with like perfectly fit costumes for every child just based off of butcher paper drawings. So I think I come by some of it honestly, and I think that we just did it so much growing up that it doesn't occur to me to not make things myself, and it's so satisfying.
It is. We had a summer when my mom, because we grew up with access to all of our parents' like grown-up arts and carpentry supplies. My dad was a house painter and contractor. My parents met in art school. So we were allowed to use acrylic paints as kids, canvas. I definitely had some days where I stayed home sick, but then like used my dad's jigsaw and like made things out of wood alone at home with a jigsaw because I was too sick to go to school, but not too sick not to do
something. Yeah.
And there was a summer, maybe between like fifth and sixth grade, or I don't remember exactly how old we were, when my mom decided that she should make sure that we all knew how to sew a skirt. And we did. So we went and we picked out our fabric, and we did use patterns, and it was a gathered waist with a waistband around it and a button and a zipper. She was like, I'm not going to teach you how to pleat. But we'll teach you how to make a gathered skirt look really nice. And mine was, I picked like a blue and pink striped flannel material for my
skirt.
Isn't
it funny how much detail you remember about that though?
Right?
Like more than if you'd just been like, and then we went shopping and I got a new skirt for school. You're like, no, you remember how the fabric felt and that there was a zipper and that like all the details to that process.
Yeah.
Do you sew it all now?
No. I'm not afraid to, I'll use like a iron on hem. So I do that. That's the extent of my sewing. I did some needlepoint a few years ago for a birthday gift. But I don't have a sewing machine. So.
But you're creative in so many other ways too.
Yeah, I paint, so I have paints and paintbrushes and canvases here. I'm not as good at the home crafts as I would have liked to have been as a grown-up, but I'm not afraid to stick my hand in a toilet, you know. I can I'm really good at diagnosing a problem and telling my landlord or whoever I'm hiring, like, I know exactly what the problem is. It's just, do I have the focus to fix the problem on my own or the interest in solving the problem by myself? I have less of that these days.
But even having the diagnostic skills is great for self-advocating and accomplishing what you need.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's still, if you don't have that, then you're just like, I don't know, something's wrong. I need somebody to tell me what's wrong.
Yeah. So what were some big projects that you remember getting to work on when you were a kid? Like, so what are some of those real clear memories for you?
Well, my dad made remote control model airplanes with all of us.
Oh, with like balsam wood?
Yes. Well, and like the rice paper that you'd have to like coat and paint and like like they were wired to this. I can't even describe it, but like old school, like before it was remote control, where it was actually still like on wires.
Right.
And there were like little things inside the wings that would move. So, which is why you had to use the rice paper. So it's still got, So I had a bright red strawberry shortcake plane.
That's amazing.
Cause she's like, you know, I think strawberry shortcake and Abby Cadabby are like my lifelong besties.
Yeah.
So yeah, I had a strawberry shortcake plane. I also, my brothers were in Boy Scouts. So I had a Pinewood Derby car, which is actually still on the shelf in my office.
Nice.
That is bright red, and it is Cabbage Patch Kid and Strawberry Shortcake.
I'm seeing a theme.
So that, I mean, I remember those. And then when I was a little older, I actually made like a really nice model airplane with my dad that I still have hanging. With my mom, it was always sewing stuff like quilts all over my house that we did and clothing. I do remember the first one she had me do all on my own. Kind of, I was thinking about it during your story. It was going into sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And I loved this pattern. And she's like, that's not going to look so great. And I was like, no, it's amazing. And then I picked the material and she was like, that's probably not a great material for that pattern. And I was like, no, I see it in my head. And I made the most hideous outfit that I have ever made.
Yeah.
Which I never wore once. And yet my mother refused to throw away. So it's still in a box of something in the basement that she sent when we bought our house of like, one day I'm going to open that and be like, oh,
she was right.
She was so right. But I learned from that. I made my own wedding dress.
Wow.
It was a red silk Dupont.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
That is amazing.
Yeah. It took me 7 or 8 weeks, like every night after work sewing. I made 3 different like muslin mock-up patterns first because the material was so expensive, right? And then it had to be fully lined, and the lining silk is also as delicate as the silk.
Yeah.
So like you can't undo anything because it'll just rip. So it like had to be perfect.
Right.
So no pressure. That was probably the most, like the biggest thing I've ever sewn.
Yeah. And somehow it didn't ruin sewing for you.
It didn't.
You didn't get to the end of that and say, well, that was my last sewing project.
No, I still love it.
That's great.
Yeah. My sewing machine used to live in like a little quiet spot. And now it's actually downstairs near the kitchen because I've been doing nothing but masks since April.
Right. Yeah. My mom made a ton of masks right at the beginning because it was a clear action that she could take.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get like between 20 and 50 a week done. Yeah. There's just still so many people, and they're wearing out now too, all the original ones.
Right.
But also there's just so many places in the country, like going back to my native connections, but a lot of the reservations are just still asking for thousands of them.
Yeah.
So I'm still making them. I keep thinking I'm going to make some winter clothes, and every time I sit down, it turns into masks. Last year there was a yarn club at my daughter's school.
Oh.
And I got sucked into being a chaperone for that, which was amazing because it was like, you know, first through seventh grade kids who would just show up after school and like crochet or knit or finger knit, or like they had to be doing something with yarn.
Yeah.
And like for an hour, I was just like chilling with these kids, and I get to hear about what happened on the playground, and they'd tell me jokes, and like it very much reminded me of being a kid sitting around that table with other relatives. Just this moment of like, because your hands are busy doing something, the conversation flows so naturally and so easily. It was really, really lovely, and we haven't figured out how to recreate that on Zoom. It just doesn't have the same connection. We're gonna have to wait till we can get back together for yarn club.
Yeah. It's hard. It's something I've been trying to do more often on Zoom, like with board meetings and stuff, is sending people into small breakout groups at the beginning that are just random. So sending people into small breakout groups for like a 5 or 8 minute chit chat and making it random so it's not clicky.
Right.
And then
kind of more like you just showed up and sat at a table with somebody and you kill a couple minutes until things start, right? Yep.
Yeah. And how do you bring some of that serendipity? You know, nothing is spontaneous anymore. Nothing is, there's so little serendipity.
So I'm the Girl Scout leader, and these Girl Scouts are hilarious. Like, I was on a call on Thursday night with a bunch of brownies that are in second grade.
Okay.
And we were doing our democracy badge with them. So they're learning all about the importance of voting and the judicial system and, like, you know, such huge important things, right? And we had them come up with a dispute that they needed to solve. And, like, they were so interactive and so cute and, like, they just desperately wanted to talk about when one of the girls stole another girl's cookie, because this has just been a thing for them since it happened. And so, you know, I had my older Girl Scouts kind of running the call and we navigated this dispute, and it was so refreshing and so sweet to see their willingness to engage. And then they taught me the funniest thing that I don't know how or where it started, but I mentioned it to a couple of people after the Zoom call. I said something on Facebook, and just tons of people were telling me that, like, all the kind of littles, elementary school kids in this whole Chicago area seem to be doing this, and nobody's quite sure where it came from. But they have some kind of secret signal.
Uh-huh.
And then, because, I mean, for them in school, like, chat's turned off. Most of them couldn't even type if, you know. But so there's some signal, and it might be a stuffed animal that comes through the screen. It might be, like, number of pets. We haven't been able to figure it out. And they will all pick up their laptops and start moving them around and singing. And it's called motion sickness opera. And they do it for, like, 30 seconds, and then they just stop as if nothing else happened and, like, go back to the call. And when oh my God, I had them.
So did you see it? Were you in a meeting where it happened and you were like, what is happening?
Well, so they clearly wanted to tell me something at the end of this meeting. And so I finally was like, you know, what is it? And their troop leader was like, well, I guess you guys can do it now. And so they all just, like, dove into it, and they're just, and I mean, you imagine, like, the gallery screen on your Zoom when suddenly there's, like, 14 things moving in all directions and all this noise coming. I was like, oh, like, it does. But it was also just hilarious. And, like, it was one of the most beautiful things I've seen on Zoom since Zoom happened, because it was this moment of spontaneity and connection and, like, it was so lighthearted,
right?
But without, like, forcing the lightheartedness,
right? Yeah,
right. Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure how we went down that track, but talking about Zoom. It was really a cool experience for me to work with these girls and to learn a new Zoom game.
Yeah,
because so authentic.
I heard something. I saw it on Twitter that somebody was like, "Does anybody know? Are they using that? There's a rumor right now that so you can do, like." Right. I can do a reaction on Zoom, and that there's some sort of
hack. Yeah.
Well, the kids are, like, doing Zoom Morse code with the reactions.
Yeah. But that's some of the older
kids. Like, yeah.
Fourth, fifth, and then middle school than, you know, these little ones.
How are you and your other Girl Scout leaders approaching the other, like, maker badges, like, how are they getting on Zoom and making together? Like, how is the other parts? Democracy, I understand you can learn on Zoom.
We've been doing a mix. So we've done some badges that are, you know, a little easier to do. We did for my older girls, we did a animal helpers, where we learned all about service animals and how they're trained. And that can all be done through, you know, Zoom interviews and stuff. But we've been doing some art badges where we just package up materials and drop them at each girl's house.
Yeah.
And then at a set time, we all get on Zoom together and create together. It's been kind of a mix, and it's been kind of hit or miss what works and what doesn't. You know, Girl Scouts is very much girl led. So I really am trying to take what they want to be doing.
You
know, my troupe is very, very service oriented. So we've made cards. That's been a creative outlet. We've made cards to donate to nursing homes and to first responders. We've done a lot of that kind of stuff. And then, you know, since, especially with all the Zoom fatigue, our meetings have gotten shorter and we spend more time kind of just being goofy with each other than we normally do.
Yeah.
But I feel like they don't get a whole lot of space for that elsewhere.
Right.
So it's kind of a mix.
Yeah.
But I mean, the virtual programming, there's so many creative people out there. There's all these groups that have shown up on Facebook of people who are like, here's how you can do these 85 different things. We've been doing a citizen scientist badges.
Ooh.
So, and those are awesome through SciStarter.com. So many of them are geared towards what's in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a great way to get the girls outside, but also very safely outside. So, you know, my middle schoolers, I can tell them, you know, go for a 20-minute walk and take photos and upload them into the iNaturalist app. But the younger girls can sit on their deck and count the number of squirrels they see in 20 minutes and like, no, mom, it's homework. I got to go sit outside
and look at squirrels
and look at squirrels and count them.
That's fantastic.
So, and that's been a lot of fun because they also then see how their contributions matter.
Yeah. So masks were a skill you already had.
Yes.
That you reapplied during COVID. Have you learned any new crafts or maker? Have you learned any new ways of making since COVID started?
I did learn how to use the bandsaw.
Ooh.
Yes. I've always been terrified of the bandsaw.
Yeah, because you like your hands the way they are.
And I've always like done way more work than I needed to just so I didn't have to use the bandsaw. But with doing the flooring and the renovation, like bandsaw and miter saw were like a must. Like there was just, I mean,
no getting around it. That's exciting.
So I can add that to my, there was actually a, like they go around, you know, like the list of, like there's always the one of like, you know, you've been to jail, you've gotten a tattoo, you've been like how many of these things, right? And there was one that went around this summer that was like farm life. And it was like, you know, you've been swimming in a retention pond. And it kind of made me laugh of like, you know, you've eaten lunch in a chicken coop or you, and I was like, so many of those things. And I was joking that I was going to put one together of like, you know, how many of these tools do you know? Because I loved, you know, again, I love making, I love tools.
Yeah.
So I don't think we had to buy any new tools, but we did have some tools that my dad had given us that we were like, I don't know what I'd ever use these for. That we were like, oh, this like bendy saw is perfect here. And I don't know what it's called, but that I need the bendy saw to get under the doorway.
Yep.
So yeah, I definitely some new saws. I learned I had some new, as far as making, I don't think so. I think really my kind of level up was doing the home renovation. Like this was a bigger thing than I'd ever been in charge of.
Yes. You know? So you did hardwood or did you do like a laminate that came in? I don't know.
It's more of a laminate. It's an engineered. Yeah.
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 It's not much less work. It's a lot of measuring and cutting and leveling and up and down off the floor. It's not, I mean, laminate is certainly easier than hardwood, but it's not less skilled or simple.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I want to do hardwood because of the amount, like this was a lot of work and, you know, but at the same time, like I love hiking. I love going camping for days on end. So I also kind of love that feeling at the end of like working all day where I was like, yeah, I'm strong and I'm sweaty and I smell bad and it's amazing.
Yeah. It's a great feeling. Know?
It is to say it was very similar to like normally during the summer, I would go hiking or camping or backpacking in New Mexico up in the mountains.
Yeah.
And obviously that didn't happen this year. So it was nice to have that moment where I was like, yeah, I'm like so sore. I'm not sure I can get off the couch tonight and I smell bad and I need a shower and I want to eat everything.
Yep.
like that similar feeling of having been out in the mountains all day and for different reasons, great. But you know,
yeah.
Yeah. So I like that.
I mean, what I know of your daughter from the internet,
yes,
is that she is very willing to try making anything and everything on her own.
Yes.
Do you guys have some big projects coming up for this winter or something that she's been wanting to learn that now she's getting like old enough to like actually get to try with you?
Well, she did last spring. She was kind of bored during school,
yeah,
remote school. So she took some out school classes and she picked what she wanted. And
yeah,
she took a couple of cooking classes and she, for the first time ever, like totally kicked us out of the kitchen.
Oh.
In the past, she still wanted some supervision. She wanted, yeah, us to do the oven. So it was kind of exciting that Tuesday morning every week we got a new kind of muffin.
Oh.
We liked that a lot.
That was
so she's
really
gotten
nice.
A lot more confident. And then for Mother's Day, she made me orange chicken with rice.
Wow.
She did need a little help from my husband with that, but she did good. And then we have this tradition. You might have seen photos over the years. When she was little, when she was two, I started it, where we had her lay down on butcher paper and drew her, like, mm-hmm, thinking like my mom. And then we cut it out of wood and we, okay, turned her into either a superhero or a monster every year.
Uh-huh.
And then that's our Halloween decorations. So at this point, we have this like little army of my little girl every year as a different thing.
Uh-huh.
So this year she said she's going to do all the cutting herself.
Cool.
And I've been kicked out of the design process. Last year, I got kicked out of the design process. She was like, if I have any questions, I'll ask Dad.
Ooh.
So last year she did all the design and this year she says she's going to do all the cutting by herself.
Wow. Is it like really exciting that she's able to take on that project or is it a little bit of grieving that it's not your project anymore?
Well, I mean, I think there's always a little bit of both. Like,
yeah,
you know, when we have these little ones and we raise them with the intention that they are empowered and competent and confident, that then when they show up that way, we have to let them be.
Yep.
And sometimes that's hard because, yeah, you know, it's my daughter, but also my other Girl Scouts, you know, and sometimes they're like, Miss Joanna, we've got this. And I'm like, oh, you do.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of you. But also I wish, like, I kind of wish I was still needed, but,
yeah,
but then when you can let that go, you can see how they need you now in different ways.
Yeah.
I think kids are such a great place to learn about, mm-hmm, relationships.
Yeah.
Because the reality of it is that our adult relationships are the same.
Yeah.
You know, when you and I met, what we needed from each other was very different than what we need from each other now.
Totally.
And the projects we worked on back then were, you know, collaborative because we were trying things that nobody had ever heard of.
Yeah.
In a platform, in a medium that nobody had ever used.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we support each other in the work that we're doing, but, mm-hmm, we've gone different directions, and to allow that, yeah, but also still allow the connection is pretty great.
Yeah. I mean, I think if there's a lesson I've learned that I wish I had learned before we did Riding the Rails, it was, I wish I had been able to let go of the relay and like, let you run with it. You had such big ideas and I was so afraid of anyone else like leading the idea. And I think like in my 40s, like I think I've gotten better about saying like, that's a big idea and I don't need to be the one who executes it. And I wish I had had that level of awareness of when we did Riding the Rails to be comfortable saying like, know what, Joanna can like really do this and I can just let go and be happy I was there at the beginning. So I wish I had been able to do that then, because I think it would have had such a different life if I had been able to let go.
I appreciate that. But I also think at the time, you know, we were all a little bit younger than we are now.
Yeah.
And there were, you know, there were what, three or four of us that were kind of the core of that project.
Yeah.
And you know, one of my kind of struggles has been for years is that I do have big ideas.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always mean they're like possible. And, you know, I'm kind of always the one, you know, who's way outside the box, and it's a lot of work, and sometimes it's too much work for the gain. So I think that experience for me, it was actually good to have somebody rein me in a little bit, because with a brand new baby and
right,
else, my huge ideas, I don't know that we could have done them. Like,
yeah,
you made it manageable, which is not a bad thing, because it actually happened. Like,
yeah,
you can have the biggest idea in the world, but if you can't execute it, nothing happens.
That was so riding the rails. For people who don't know what it was we had this idea of putting musicians on Amtrak, and they would stop in towns, get off the train, have a concert, get back on the train the next day, go to another town. And so we did this with David Cav and Reverend Billy. And then they met up in Nashville and they recorded at Sun Studios in Nashville. And we had this idea of doing, I mean, it was sort of like a whistle stop concert series, a train based festival. And, you know, so like David did like coffee shop concerts and on his way to Nashville, and they got there and they recorded. And there's part of me that thinks we were before our time. Like, it was a big idea that
yeah.
I think was before.
It's just that, you know, the stuff we came up with that nobody was doing in the same way yet. And now, like, now we talk about that and it's like, well, why wouldn't you do that?
Like, yeah, now you do a GoFundMe. You'd like, Instagram Live didn't exist.
Right. There was no Instagram.
There was no Instagram. Right.
There was no Instagram.
Yeah.
There was no TikTok. There was no Snapchat.
Yeah, there was Blog Talk Radio, which was probably key to our plan, right? Which was like kind of a live stream podcast.
Right.
So
there was Twitter, and some people were on Facebook.
Right. So in today's world, it would be super possible.
Right.
Like, the technology has caught up with the idea.
Well, and so, of course, for me, that means that we'd have to like take those ideas and throw them out and go like further over the top, right?
Maybe what we can do is we can give it to Martin and we can say, make this a Milliken project.
Well, I mean, you know, he did the Pig Face tour last fall. He took students on a bus. They had a second tour bus. So
oh, that's great.
They had Pig Face, the band, touring.
Yeah.
And then they had a second bus of students who were touring, learning about touring.
Well, is there anything about crafting, making, starting projects that I haven't asked you about that you wanted to make sure to include?
I think the only thing I will say, which is what I tell my Girl Scouts all the time, is that there's no wrong. You just do stuff. So like when my girls were younger, we used to make Valentine's Day cards every year for one of the nursing homes. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't buy any Valentines. I just brought like cardstock and like leftover stuff from my decoupage projects, because I wanted them to get the idea that anything they made was something they made. And it wasn't going to be a masterpiece, because you've never done this before.
Right.
I don't even know if you like it. So trying to create something amazing doesn't make sense. Right? You have to just start somewhere. It's the same with cooking. It's the same with sewing. It's the same with painting. I'm miserable at painting. I cannot do anything that's representational, only abstract.
Yeah.
But I'll still do it, because there's an idea. And sometimes it's just the process of getting out of our own head enough to create. So yeah, I mean, I always encourage people to just try. Just try.
That's great.
And not be attached to the outcome. If you need to have the perfect product, there's always Etsy.
I don't think COVID has silver linings. Like, it is a deadly virus.
Yes.
And we've lost so many people.
Way too many.
But it is a time when you can, if there is, you know, like this podcast, I was like, well, I can either wait until I have perfected sound production and stuff. I was like, or I can just learn in public and know that it's going to get better, or it's not, but I think it's gotten better. So this has been the thing. This has been the skill that I've said, I'm going to use the time that I used to spend on the train, interviewing people, editing, doing, learning, like fixing my ear.
Sure.
Like learning how to hear things as I do the audio editing that I just couldn't hear on week one. I was like, no, sounds great to me. And then friends who have better ears. It's like learning how to taste wine.
Right.
All wine tastes fine to me, unless it's bad.
Sure.
But the more you learn, yeah.
Right. But, you know, you don't become an expert by doing something one time or even 10 times.
Yeah.
And you don't have to become an expert to enjoy doing something. So much of it is about your intentions and your engagement in the process.
Yes.
And I hear what you're saying about silver linings. It's not at all silver linings, but there have been opportunities in all of this for us to evaluate what our priorities really are and how we want to express those to the people we love and the community around us. Within that, there's been opportunities for some of us to try new things and make different decisions because the world is different.
The world is different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's good when we can grow because, you know, it's not like we had a choice.
No.
So you work with what is and you figure out how that can be the best possible version of you now.
Yep.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited.
Thank you.
And I don't feel like we've had the time to talk like this in a long time.
I know. It's been, it has been the gift of this podcast. Our people that I haven't talked to in 10 or 20 years and just talking about something that people love and not interviewing them about their job.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.